Welcome to Michigan EggCast 1.8, where I do not talk about Anthony and my predictions of what we thought would happen last weekend until the very end. Michigan has a series against Ohio State where they win a game and they tie a game. I mean, I guess they kind of lose it, but lose a point in it. But they come out with 4 points in the weekend, and that's not the goal, but I thought that it was a very productive weekend.
Yes, I think that what they got out of the weekend is probably justified, and looking back, it's, you know, can be considered a success. They ended up with a winning record against Ohio State.
Right. Yes. They had, I mean, they won, they took 7 of the 12 points against Ohio State.
Better than
which
6.
Which is a good thing.
Right?
And it, yeah. And if you look at the rest of the league, everybody else split. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you had State that was off, right, but everybody else split. So Michigan actually won the weekend, which was
very good.
An odd feeling leaving Yost on Saturday night thinking, okay, they got the most points.
Against the best
10.
Team in the league.
Right. And we'll talk more about what that means for the future. Mm-hmm. But let's get into the games really quick. So on Friday, Ohio State kind of outplayed Michigan for a while, it seemed like.
Yes, absolutely.
But Michigan still hung around. You mentioned a little bit you thought Mann was pretty solid.
He kept them in it. I mean, we were annoyed. We were annoyed at how bad they were playing. I mean, we were. We were sitting in their press box.
Yeah.
Like, this stinks. You know, and they just weren't really playing well. They couldn't get the puck out. Like, they weren't moving the puck well. They weren't generating a lot of good chances. I think with 5 minutes left in the first period, they had 4 shots.
Yeah.
Ohio State wasn't burying them, but you could feel the dam was about to break, like basically for the first like 36, 37 minutes of the game, in my opinion.
Yeah, and Corsi ended up playing hard to Ohio State's favor throughout the end of the game.
Right.
But it just almost looked like Michigan wasn't like fundamentally sound. Like pucks were kind of bouncing off sticks a little bit.
Yes.
Like passes were just a bit off.
Yep.
Yeah.
There was a lot of icings and a lot of offsides.
Yeah, they just were. Yeah, yeah. It's seeming like not on the same page.
Right.
And but somehow they're still in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Mann played fine.
I thought he played really well. It wasn't like a situation where he was standing on his head. The shots weren't like 30-2.
Right.
You know, but they were. There was enough where he had to make a few really good saves. Early on, he had to make a couple right off the bottom of the circle. Like there was one on the power play. There was one off of a guy walking out from behind the net, if I'm not mistaken. Like he had to stand pretty tall in the first period. I think, you know, when your goalie's keeping you close, you're able to just kind of claw back into the game. And I think that's kind of what Michigan did.
Yeah. And then sort of transitioning into the third, they end up giving up a second goal. Well, I'm sorry. No, let's get back to the second period here where it's 1-0 and Michigan doesn't have a lot, but they get 2 power plays overlapping right near the end of the second period. They get a power play, and then a few seconds into the next power play, they get another one, and all of a sudden it's 5-on-3. And there's like, you know, I keep trying to remember, I think it's about 30 seconds left, and they get the puck in the zone on a 5-on-3, and their power play hasn't been great for a while now, since probably Norris or even earlier. But I was thinking, man, here's another 5-on-3 opportunity like they had against Minnesota. They convert here. It kind of changes the whole feel going into the third.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was Lockwood that got deep along the goal line and found Hughes streaking down, and he just fired a bomb and hit the net with 2 seconds left that basically took an Ohio State game advantage feel in the arena and just set it all on fire. And all of a sudden, you're thinking, okay, it's 1-1.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was 1-1.
1-1.
Yep.
We dodged all those bullets. Mm-hmm. If they come out and play just one nice period, they can get out of here with 3 points. And that's essentially what they did, because they kind of flipped the script a little bit in the third period.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And
but I kind of want to go back to the way that kind of unfolded, because I have a lot of notes on it. Like,
okay.
So the first period, they had a really bad penalty kill, which was was related to one of the Ohio State goals, I believe. Like, they didn't get a power play goal, but I think it wore Michigan down like right before.
Yeah.
They had a really bad power play where we were just like, what in the heck is going on? Like, they only had 4 shots the first 15 minutes. They had some pretty good, like, they had a couple breaks where Ohio State broke down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Becker got a break off of a good
forecheck.
Yes.
You're right.
Yep. And then the second period was another really sloppy start. They had to burn a timeout on an icing
call.
Mel was not happy.
Yeah.
Becker missed a couple golden opportunities, I remember.
Yes.
But he was right there. I mean, I thought Becker was pretty strong in this game. They did fall apart for a couple minutes right in the middle of the second, I believe. And we're, like I said, the dam felt like it was about to break. And right before the Ohio State goal, they did catch a good break where they broke in and hit off the post, and we didn't know if we went.
That's right, because it looked like it probably could have, should have been reviewed.
Yeah,
and
I thought it went off the padding of the back of the net, like he slipped it in.
Right, Mike Pasta, right. I think.
Yeah,
yeah, uh-huh. And then that was what led to, like, a few seconds later was a 4-on-3 goal.
Really nicely executed.
Yeah, and a 4-on-3 is technically, I count it as an odd man rush because it is.
Right,
but. I mean, if you get three guys back on defense, that's usually good enough.
100%.
What Ohio State did is one of their defensemen joined the rush and took a great angle to give like a release pass before it was getting back to Yobst and he got into the slot and scored.
It was excellent.
But that was probably as nice a play as we've seen all
night. I
think
it was better like I wouldn't say it was bad Michigan defense. I mean, they're probably not happy they gave up a 4-on-3 goal. But it was really good Ohio State execution.
Yeah, if you're a defenseman and you see that you can beat two of the forwards down the ice and everyone else is up, all of a sudden
you run a transition.
Yes, exactly.
But Ohio State also hit three posts in that period.
That's
so
true.
The dam was about to break, and the Hughes goals were so huge because it was right before the intermission. They could go into the room and be, you know, kind of get their feet under them and be happy. And they didn't deserve to be 1-1.
But you could also go into the intermission planning for a minute and a half of power play and set something up to take the lead.
Yeah.
And that was a big chance that they had. They didn't convert on it.
Right.
But when you score at the end of a period like that in those last few seconds of a 5-on-3, it kills the shortest remaining penalty.
Right. So they still had a power play coming up.
And the longest one.
Yep.
And that was, and it was just kind of like a wow! All this stuff that you mentioned, these bad passes, these like penalties, these wear downs, these bad breaks, are like behind us because we're level again.
Come back in the third period, and Lisinski got Ohio State back to the lead. But at that point, the game felt more even.
Yes,
and it was I think it was a shot where there was a rebound that kicked out in the slot, but the original shot was deflected at the point of release. I think it went off the top of.
Yeah, it was
Man's
shot
pad.
From farther back.
Right.
Yeah.
And Lisinski put in a rebound. So Michigan's down with 14 minutes left. Yeah, 14 minutes left.
And that was a little like...
It was a bummer because they had been playing better the last 6 or 7 minutes.
Right.
Including the end of the last period. And then I think the Moyle-Van Wy line took
Dude, that
over.
Line...
Yeah.
So I remember you
Moyle
saying...
Moyle was a player of the weekend for me. I thought Moyle was outstanding.
You said something interesting to me on the first shift because Michigan gets the puck in like 20 seconds and either there's a defensive zone faceoff or there's an offensive zone faceoff because of a freeze or the puck's in the net.
Right.
And you said, oh my gosh, the fourth line's on the ice. And because they took the first line off. And that was, and I understood what you were saying.
It's very atypical.
That. Right.
Yeah.
And then as the game played out, that fourth line, when the puck is deep in the opponent's zone has kept turning them over. Like Ohio State could not break the puck out. They couldn't get the puck even to the blue line. The fourth line was doing a great job. And I thought that was like not necessarily an omen, but like something that you could see, oh, this is what Michigan needs to do is they need to get the puck deep and make Ohio State go the entire length of the ice on them.
Yes.
And they couldn't really do that.
No.
And that fourth line ended up tying and winning the game with goals that just kind of put a lot of pressure on the defense.
Errors on the defense.
Yes.
We noticed this kind of early is Ohio State's defensemen weren't really good at moving the puck. They were a little bit error prone. They were susceptible to pressure. Like just overall Ohio State's, when you look at like a top 10 team.
Yeah.
I was thinking that this is not really a great. They didn't have a really strong defense. I think their best defensemen from a points per game or points perspective, like 10 points on the year. Like you can tell they just don't rely on their defense for anything other than probably just getting in the way.
Yeah.
And the strength of the Moyle, I guess we'll call it the fourth line because it's listed as a fourth line.
I mean, that's
been
what
the fourth
it always
line
is.
Most of the year, I think.
The GVY line.
Van Wy has been the fourth line center, I think, every single game or close to it.
Pretty close, yeah.
But really, yeah, Brian's right. Like it's basically the second or third line now.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Especially in terms of like when you're watching,
right?
I mean,
well,
you're
putting them out there for offensive zone faceoffs,
right? Yeah. And I mean, you want to see Lockwood. That's who I want to see on the ice. But after that, I'm like, geez, if you got Van Wy and Raby and Moyle out, like that, they have as good a chance to score as anyone.
And for the people who haven't really watched these guys play, I have a friend who I grew up with who is a big hockey guy, but he really he talks a little bit in like abstract like comparisons, which I really appreciate because it makes me think. And he said they were a line full of Chris Drapers. And it was totally right. I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. And he called it the Draper line when they scored on Friday. He sent me a text. He was like, Draper line does it again.
Draper to Draper from Draper.
Yeah. And it does. It did make me think a lot about like the late 90s before hockey really changed, had lines of guys who were like kind of gritty with a little bit of skill.
Just winning pucks on the board.
Right. Your really good fourth lines had guys who could play. Like McCarty could play.
Yeah.
You know, Chris Draper and Maltby could play.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's kind of what the Michigan's line is like.
Yeah.
It's like a throwback 90s grind line. And, you know, they had 90s night a couple weeks. No, they had 2000s night. Darn it. They should have a 90s
night. They did have a 90s night, too. Okay. Or they did, I know they did last year. I think they did at some point. But
they should have a 90s night again because it is 90s night every time that line's on the ice.
And they're on the ice enough.
But it's good, and it works, and it's just another example. You know, credit to the coaching staff because I think we talked earlier in the season about the Becker line where they're really good at playing from behind the net, and they had this thing that worked. This 90s line is... Should we call it the 90s?
That's, I mean, you've pretty much designated
them. They've done a pretty good job with, you know, what they're capable of doing. Mel found another good line out of these guys. And so I don't really see it as a criticism that they've risen to like a second or third line because honestly, throughout the course of games and spurts of seasons on any team or any league, you're going to see like lines that are performing are going to get boosted up the lineup a little bit. And I think that's what it is. And Moyle was my player of the weekend. He had, what, 3 or 4 points?
He had 3 goals.
Yeah, so it was really good. You know, he's 19.
And he was the guy that Wies talked about.
We talked about him and
before
Randall
the season.
Yeah. You know, being high ceiling guys.
Randall hasn't gotten the time, but Moyle...
I've got an opinion on that. But I think that... I think Moyle's done really well with his opportunity.
Yes.
And you could see him grow, and he's, you know, effective. You could see a little bit of the stick handling and scoring touch. Like, he was productive in the USHL. Like, when you look at his stats, how it would translate. Like I said, we picked Moyle and Randall to be, you know, able to produce. And I think with Moyle, it's kind of born true. He was given the opportunity on the fourth line and kind of worked his way. I mean, I don't, everybody's worked their way up a little bit, but he's productive in that environment. Like, the environment that he's in, he's been able to be productive.
Well, this line is the only line that hasn't been blended throughout the whole year.
That's true.
I mean, I know the Norris injury was big, and
that
so you had
that
to
line kind of naturally. Right.
But like, they've mixed guys up before, and this one, I mean, I don't ever remember other than when they're down a forward and you have to scramble.
Right.
But like, this line plays together when they're out there.
Yeah, so. And it's been pretty good. And
both, you know, the goals were good. Like, Van Wy's driving behind the net. He's trying to take a guy on and get in front. He throws one of them. He throws off of the goalie's pads, and Moyle's crashing. And the he just beats the defenseman down and flips the puck in.
Well, the defenseman took the wrong guy. We talked about,
Oh, yeah.
Which is good. I mean, it's the way you got to create confusion down low. They keyed on Ohio State's less than stellar defense.
Yep. And the second one, he did beat him because that was the wraparound that got that from the right side to the left side of the net. And Moyle beats his guy in there and flips the puck in and wins the game.
Yep.
And like, that's just, and we talk about like, that's kind of what this team needs is goals like that, because they don't have like 7 first round picks.
Yeah.
They're not BU. Like, this is what they have, and they're finding ways to score in the ways that they're capable of doing it.
Yeah, they did really well.
And so
I think that, I think we're going to have, wait, Van Wy is a freshman. Moyle's a freshman.
Correct. Raby's a sophomore.
Yeah, we might get... I mean, it's the same thing we were talking about with the Pasta line last year. So we might get it... I mean, that's been broken up, but could you get 3 years out of this?
Yeah.
That would be pretty nice.
I mean, we'll see who comes in and the way things shake out, but yeah,
hey,
I mean, that's...
That's your fourth line.
Well, and I mentioned this on Sunday. Good. College hockey is now older players.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to get those older players, they have to age when you're in school. And so now Michigan has a lot of 20, 21-year-olds that are young.
They're going to be 23 and 24 at some point.
Exactly. And that's, and they're not, they're probably not leaving.
And if you look at hockey age curves, your prime starts at 22, 23 now.
So Michigan's going to get the best that they can get out of these guys in the next few years. They don't have the elite stars, but there just aren't elite stars in hockey anymore. And we talked about this in general. I mean, there's still, you get your sprinkle here and there.
There's only 10 first-round picks in the entire, or 10 or 11 in the entire first round.
Right.
10 or 11 first-round picks in the entire NCAA. So, I mean, Michigan's fortunate enough to have 2 of them.
Yeah.
But
well, this year.
Right. And so, but they are making do with...
And they're laying a nice bedrock for a future team.
Uh-huh. You have to play 18 guys in a game. You can't play 14.
And the guys and some of these guys are getting better. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not the most talented, but they're getting better, and that's the other thing to see.
Yeah, so they've done it again. I would say that to the credit of the coaching staff, they found a good line out of guys. And, you know, that's one of the things that we've been talking about is they've been pretty good at doing this.
Yep.
So
we should talk a little bit about Saturday.
Can we have one final thought on?
Sure.
That's my hot take.
Okay.
Hot take on each game.
Okay.
So when we were leaving the rink, we felt like...
On Friday or Saturday?
Friday.
Okay.
Michigan was not the best team on Friday. And they won.
And they came from behind and won, which was something I don't even know if they've done.
They were really only good for 16, 17 minutes.
Sure.
And you can do that when your goalie plays well, and if you can keep the game close, and you can have some really timely, good plays, and that's exactly what Michigan did. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. That's hockey. We've been, I think as Michigan fans, we've been on the other end of that way too many times. So it was kind of nice to be on the positive end of one of those.
Yeah.
But Michigan has lost its fair share of games like that over the years.
Yep.
But that was my kind of hot take. It's like, they probably didn't deserve to win, but they did, and it was cool. So.
Yep. So then on Saturday, you're kind of like riding a little high. You're thinking, man, now I got a shot for a sweep against a
man. Is that a Strauss man?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man. Oh, see, man. I did it again. Oh,
God.
So
for those of you listening at home, David is like the pun king.
So Saturday, Michigan, I don't even know. it was kind of... Like, I'm trying to go places, and I just can't get past this power play thing. And, like, they had – Ohio State, again, kind of controls the goals. Mm-hmm. They get out to a lead again. Mm-hmm. Michigan is down at 3-1, probably halfway through the game. And it's getting a little bleak because, Michigan starts really well, but they don't score.
Mm-hmm.
Hughes hits a post, and Ohio State does get a goal, and – then
didn't Ohio State only have like four even strength shots in the first period?
Yeah, and so Michigan kind of
Michigan did really well.
Yeah. They started well, but they couldn't score.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the Penn State game. So the game goes along, and it gets to be 3-1, and you're just thinking, man, like this is just kind of like they have this chance again after a big win, and it's so they get a power play goal back, and when they needed one because they didn't have a lot of power plays, and Ciccone scores like on a almost a pass from one of the Pastas. I think it's a shot. He's trying to get it on net, but it goes through the crease. Ciccone kind of catches it and taps it in. It's 3-2, brings some life back. And then like Michigan's kind of pushing from there, and they get to the third period, and it's 3-2, and it's still a game. And then like you wanted to talk a little bit about how the third period was just very different.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of an
experience. God, it just can we? I mean, yeah,
you want
it was an amazing hockey game.
It was good. I mean, it was unfortunate because Michigan was
loud,
right? Because
it felt like old Yost to an extent. You get those rare games that feel like old Yost, and Yost has changed for many reasons
because people could feel.
Yeah, there was a lot of excitement
and what really this win
game,
would mean.
A rival,
yes.
It was a quality hockey game.
Yes.
The first two periods, but. Yeah, and the third period became very choppy because of the repeated reviews.
Yes, and that was the part that you thought was
so bad.
Just took a long time.
Well, the whole game took 3 hours.
Yeah.
We had a regular season hockey game take 3 hours.
Yeah.
And that was miserable.
Yeah.
But the game was on a decent pace until the third period. I mean, there was the 5 minute was... Yeah, the 5 minute checking from behind, the first one was late in the second. So maybe you can say the game really started slowing down then. After the first 17 minutes of the game.
Right.
But it was the last period for me was miserable. It shouldn't take away, like, you know, the fact that Michigan got a tie out of this game. Like, maybe we should talk about this in a little bit. But I was, it was just, so bad.
The part of it that I agree with you in is that some of the penalties, I was just, I don't like to talk about referees. We've talked about this. We try not to discuss this. But when you get two game misconducts for really bad hits where a guy gets thrown out, and then the receiving team of the power play or of the bad hit gets 2 minutes for an after the whistle roughing.
Yeah.
It's just like, I don't understand how those aren't matching.
So
especially twice. Have you ever seen twice? I've seen once.
I've seen it before. I think overall, like the special teams would be the story. Penalties would be the story of the weekend on some sense.
Yeah.
Because Michigan took four offensive zone penalties this weekend, two in each game, which is really bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Lockwood kneeing was offensive zone. It might have been.
Warren.
Or, yeah, I'm sorry, the Warren kneeing penalty was offensive zone.
We were looking at that was after the Hughes
couldn't tell.
Post.
None of us could tell. But if it was, that would have been five, and that would have been 13 minutes of penalties taken off offensive zone play, which was even worse. So, number one, that's really bad for Michigan.
Yeah.
And it ties into what you're saying about the power play, where it didn't really generate a lot on Saturday. The penalty kill really struggles with defending in zone. And so I think that's a lot of the story. When you get to what you're talking about with the majors, Ohio State takes two major penalties in the last 23 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
Both of them are justified checking from behind.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wasn't sure that Raby was getting up because he was down for a while.
I didn't see the Raby as well. I saw the Blankenberg a little bit better because Blankenberg's looked bad too. But yeah, they were two really bad undisciplined penalties from Ohio State. Michigan counters by going in and roughing the offender up or whatever. And they come out of the fracas with not a full five-minute power play. They came out with a five-minute penalty and then a two-minute penalty for Michigan, making it
a three-minute,
four-on-four, which is not how the creators of the sport intended it to be.
Right.
Obviously. Now, we were upset about that. But, you know, honestly, I saw it in a game the next day.
Okay.
Okay, so I saw...
I just want to know what you have to do to get a penalty in that situation where the guy doesn't do anything in retaliation. Like, are you punching the guy in the face and he's just sitting there being like, all right, I'll just take it?
I can't completely explain the thought process. Number one, it's poor officiating.
Yeah.
I think. But this is college sports, so let's just accept the fact.
That is true.
I
understand. Yeah.
My prevailing theory is, like, especially with basketball or football, like, these guys aren't full-time.
Yeah.
They're a lawyer during the day or a stock, whatever, you know, a financial guy.
You get what you pay for.
You get what you pay for on this. And we've seen the same guys forever. I mean, but it was not really, I don't love those calls. Like I was angry with you. I thought it was kind of poor. Michigan did go in. I mean, the penalty was a penalty. Like, yeah, the guy goes in and roughs him up, but like, the guy should get a 5-minute major.
I just don't see a situation major, where right. that guy who does that mm-hmm. then just doesn't rough him back. The guy comes up and roughs you up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, he's just
calling
like,
retaliation. It's a classic call to retaliation, but not the first penalty. Yeah, it's nonsense.
So
it's bad officiating. Michigan got boned a little bit on that because they lost 2 minutes of power play time for each one of those. And so that's losing 4 minutes of power play time in the last 17 minutes of the game is painful. And it's probably a big reason why they tied.
Well, the thing is that now that we've mentioned this, the difference in this game is that Ohio State ended up going 2-for-4 on the power play, mm-hmm. and Michigan goes 1-for-5, including not
Six
scoring.
Minutes of major, yeah.
Right.
Well, and Ohio State did have a 5-minute major they played with as well.
They did, and they scored on it. Uh-huh. And that's kind of my point, is that in that situation, they took advantage of that. And Michigan defended that penalty really well, except switched off for like 20 seconds near the end, and Ohio State got the goal. And that was...
we were talking about that. I was talking about that where when Ohio State scored, I was just about to say Michigan's done a really good job on this penalty kill.
Right, and they still did.
My thoughts jinxed it,
but they still did because it's tough to kill a 5-minute major, mm-hmm. and Michigan had 2 3-minute majors mm-hmm. and could not do a thing. And it's not that they got the power play set up and looked dangerous and just hit the post. Mm-hmm. The goalie's making saves. They didn't really get it set up. And that was the thing that's just like, you know, if there you could have all the flaws Michigan has, but if you fix the power play by like 8%, they probably win multiple of the games that they have.
It's not only a matter of scoring. It's being effective where you're wearing the other team down for those 2 minutes. Also,
that's true.
So if you're hammering them, like those players are not available for the next minute or two.
Right.
Right. The penalty killers. So if you can establish a good power play where you're making them chase around the zone, like you're really putting a lot of stress on the opposition. And yes, I don't think that Michigan's. I mean, they're what 16% still,
somewhere around there.
That's not, I mean, when you have Quinn Hughes and you're at 16%, that's not really good, you know?
Yeah, and they have Lockwood, who's played really well.
I know there's been a little bit of disagreement about, like, do they have enough to have a good power play? And I will say that I've seen teams with worse talent have better power plays, and I feel like that's, you know,
I've seen them have good power plays mm-hmm. with the people that they have.
Yeah.
It just doesn't get set up consistently enough. And when they get it set up in the zone, it looks dangerous.
Well, there are two stages to the power play, because there's the zone entry and then there's the power play itself. And the power play itself, it does more resemble like... It's more of a static thing.
Yeah.
Where it's just five guys passing the puck around. It's more of a static with more set plays, more things you're looking for. It doesn't really resemble, honestly, it doesn't resemble the rest of the sport in some ways. Mm. Because you defend it differently, you set it up differently.
Sure.
But there is two components. It's the getting set up part. And, you know, so teams address it accordingly. And they don't really get set up as well sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's probably something that needs to improve. And you have one of the best entry and exit people in the entire sport. It should be a little bit better at that.
What I think. I mean, you know, there people probably disagree and there's stuff, yeah. But anyway.
I mean, there's plenty of time to address it before the end of the season. So hopefully they'll improve and we'll see.
Yep. My takeaway was Michigan, if you look at the Corsi, it's pretty 50-50. Mm-hmm. And Ohio State took advantage of their power plays better than Michigan did. And Michigan probably had better opportunities and more of them. Mm-hmm. And they had one at the end of the game with three minutes mm-hmm. that they could win the game and couldn't even get it set up. And it's just,
we were pretty excited about that.
Right. Yeah. I was sitting there in the press box and I was just kind of like, dude, this is setting up perfectly for them. And they just kind of squandered it away.
You're talking about the first overtime, right?
Well, no, the last 3 minutes of the regulation. Third period.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But they also had a power play in the first overtime
that
bled into the second, and then Ohio State scored on when the guy came out of the box.
Right, and that's how they lost the extra point. To me, the game ended for Michigan when they didn't score on that power play in the third. Like, going into overtime, mm-hmm. their Corsi was terrible, and I know it's a small sample size, but it was like something like 8-3 or 8-2.
Ohio
I mean,
State.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
So at that point, Michigan had such a golden opportunity that I was like, I don't know, they're probably going to have to go to the shootout and win it, because it just didn't seem that the team was the same as they were.
I thought them giving up a goal on a guy coming out of the box was a pretty apt metaphor for the way the special teams had been.
Yeah.
Honestly, and like, I don't see it as, it's unfortunate because I thought Michigan was a better team on Saturday.
Right.
And I think in some ways they did it to themselves, like you said, with the power play execution and the fact they took two more offensive zone penalties, aside from, you know, the evening up on the.
Yep.
But it was unfortunate. Now, can I ask one thing?
Okay.
How do you feel about the overtime? Because I'm definitely...
we talked about this.
No, I'm not trying to argue with Brian on that. I'm not like trying to subtweet or anything. My take, like my view of it is a little bit different, because I don't mind the overtime. But like I said...
Well, you have to play 5-on-5 for the first...
It's mandated by the NCAA.
I mean, that's what everyone does.
Right. But it's 4-on-4.
No, it's 5-on-5.
It's 5-on-5?
Yeah.
Oh, shoot, I don't even know anymore. That's that's what I'm getting to, is...
It changes so often.
These people go to a game... And it kind of goes back to the horrible experience that the third period was, because like college hockey officials are so bad and they just drug this game out. And,
yeah.
Like 10-minute reviews on everything.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at my clock and it's a 3-hour regular season hockey game.
Yeah.
We are definitely going to have to talk about this on a later podcast.
Okay.
Because we've been kind of hinting at it.
Okay.
The overall experience that is college hockey.
Okay.
But there are so many people that go to these games and don't know what is supposed to happen after it's tied.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
How ridiculous is that?
Well, that's definitely something we should talk about later with.
So we don't, like, we're leaving the game and you don't really even know if you're supposed to be happy or sad or whatever. It's like,
well
they got scored on in double overtime, but honestly, it didn't really hurt them. It was just a shootout.
Well, the thing is, right? We're going to talk about this in the next segment, and that's a perfect segue, because Michigan gets a point, which is big, but they miss out on a chance to get a second point. And what does that mean? Well, that second point puts them in a different place in the standings and affects different things that could happen this upcoming weekend. Mm-hmm. So this is a good time for our break, and we will come back and we will discuss what that missing that point actually means.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458. Or visit his website at MichiganLawGrad.com.
So the point that wasn't is what we were getting to at the end of the last segment. I was not trying to push you out of anything.
No, it's okay.
I was just trying to transition into, because I think that losing that point, it bodes well more for this segment when we're going to talk about the standings and where Michigan is at. So if you look at the standings in general, getting that point would have put Michigan in ahead of Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
So Ohio State's winning the conference,
mm-hmm.
and then after that is Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
and Michigan is now 2 points behind them, mm-hmm. but they're done. Minnesota has maxed out at 36. Notre Dame and Michigan both are at 34. So if Michigan had gotten that point against Ohio State, they would have been at 35.
Mm-hmm.
They would have then controlled their own destiny this weekend, because mm-hmm. these teams have two games left, and it would have put them in a position to then not have to game watch. They could just focus on themselves and go beat Wisconsin twice, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden it's all they have the two seed.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think they're going to lose a tiebreaker with Notre Dame if it's just them,
mm-hmm.
because of it's there's a lot of things that play into it, but there's very few situations with the way the points work out that would give them the benefit. I'm pretty sure. I have to go back and look at it, but I'm pretty sure about that. So now they're going to need Penn State to take points off of Notre Dame in South Bend.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan goes to Wisconsin, who, not the greatest team in the Big Ten anymore.
Quite a disappointment.
Yeah. So it's there. It's capable.
Mm-hmm.
But that 1 point could potentially mean the difference between second and third, which would potentially mean the difference between hosting and not hosting
semifinal.
In the semifinal. Yeah. So
thank you for doing that research, because it's probably about as convoluted as the overtime rules.
Well, if you look at the standings in general, uh-huh. like there is still a chance that Minnesota, Notre Dame, Michigan, and Penn State all end up with 36 points. So you have Ohio State.
Speaks to the parity in the league.
Right. You have Ohio State, and then the bottom is probably going to be Michigan State, and then Wisconsin, if they sweep Michigan, can get up to 34.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that things have been going, even if you just give everybody a split,
right,
like you have three or four teams that are really, really close. So the way this weekend breaks down is you have Penn State at Notre Dame and Michigan at Wisconsin. And those are really the four teams that are in play and are basically battling for seeds 2 through 6, because Minnesota is also in there, but they're just a spectator now.
Right.
And they're going to end up with 36. I think they've clinched at least the 4 seed, which is going to host a series, which is big for them.
Yes.
But the odds are right now, I think that if Michigan wins a game, they're probably at least guaranteed 3.
Minnesota gets to play Arizona State this weekend.
They do. Future, oh, I forgot about that. Who is in the tournament? We can't get sidetracked on that.
Future Big Ten Arizona State. Minnesota's been better lately. So, yeah, I feel bad for... Well, I don't feel bad for Michigan State. I shouldn't say that, but...
Well, that's good.
Michigan State is last, and they haven't had the most difficult weekend yet, because they still have to go to Ohio State.
That's true.
So, yeah, they were clearly the worst team this
year. Ohio State wins the Big Ten regular season on Saturday night by getting that 1 point.
Right.
And people are bummed out.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I hate it when Ohio State does well in Ann Arbor, obviously, mm-hmm. like anybody would. But it doesn't change the fact that they were going to probably win the Big Ten anyway. Even if Michigan wins that game, all it does is force Michigan to sweep next mm-hmm. weekend, and Michigan State's going to have to go to Columbus and sweep. That's not happening.
The best team in the conference only got 2 points off you in your home rank this week.
Right.
That's pretty good.
Right.
And, fine. If it wasn't Ohio State, you'd be pretty, it's good.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just always ends up being Ohio State. But, so it's going to be an interesting weekend this weekend because, like I said, you have 4 teams within 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
They all sort of play, 3 of them play each other, mm-hmm. sort of, and Minnesota's already there, but they're done. Notre Dame and Penn State both play earlier,
mm-hmm.
both nights, so you can check that out. It's going to be at like 7 o'clock. Michigan goes to Wisconsin, and they both are at 9, which is good because then you can sit and watch, see what happens, and then you can choose what you need to root for. I think that rooting for Penn State makes the most sense,
mm-hmm.
because all Michigan needs to do is win a game,
mm-hmm.
and they're in really good spot. If they win more, obviously, they're in really good shape.
Mm-hmm.
But Penn State is behind them, and so if Penn State and Michigan win, that puts them in a really good situation. Obviously, if Michigan doesn't win games, it doesn't matter. But you have to look at it from, like, well, if they win a game, what puts them in a better position?
Well, let's go to the opponent because they can win these games.
Yes.
They did tie both times against Wisconsin.
That's a great segue.
In November, which was unfortunate and a little agitating because we didn't think Wisconsin was the better team.
No, when we watched them, yeah. I was kind of like,
Wisconsin is led by Keandre Miller, who is young. He's a freshman, was on the World Junior team. I think he was pretty young for that also. But he is probably their best player in some sense. It's hard for a freshman defenseman to be your best player. I mean, Quinn Hughes wasn't even really Michigan's best player last year.
So this is really interesting that you bring this up. They have, so we have like eight things we look at generally that give us a basic overall of what a team is. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not super specific, but it kind of gives you a general like, okay, this is what to expect. Mm-hmm. They have eight drafted skaters, which is significant. Mm-hmm. Like that's a bit of talent.
Right.
They have two players that are scoring over 0.75 points per game.
It is bizarre.
None of them are at 1 point or an entire point a game. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them kind of fluctuate around 0.66, 0.5. And like Michigan has a ton of those guys. So if you want to know, well, what's a comparison to that? Mm-hmm. Like when you start getting to about 3/4 of a point a game, pushing closer to a point a game, mm-hmm. those are going to be better players. Michigan has a ton of guys that are floating around like 2/3 a point mm-hmm. a game, half point a game. And so Michigan's going to be playing a team that has similar statistics regarding how many points you're generating.
Mm-hmm.
So those are...
I would still give Michigan the edge, though, because they do have a couple guys who are producing higher.
Right, and that kind of tends to speak mm-hmm. to certain other things.
Right.
Like, for example, Corsi. Mm-hmm. Michigan is relatively high in Corsi. I think they're in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And Wisconsin's down around 20th, mm-hmm. which isn't terrible.
It's still more than I was expecting.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're in pairwise, they're not even in the top half. They're 31st.
Yes, they're worse. Are they better than Michigan State right now? They're close.
I don't know.
They've been going back and forth.
Yeah, and Michigan State and Wisconsin have kind of mm-hmm. dropped off.
Right.
Wisconsin had a crazy weekend last mm-hmm. weekend in Happy Valley. They actually won a game.
Mm-hmm.
They give up 8 the first night, I think, and just get blown out of the building. Mm-hmm. And then the next night, they hang 7. And that, I mean, if that doesn't speak to Penn State, I don't know what does. But
it's a criticism of Penn State.
Right, but Wisconsin...
Penn State's getting on my nerves. Right. They're fun, but and I've rooted for teams that score a lot and give up a lot, but at some point you have to think, just stop giving up goals.
Well, you have when you see that, it's kind of like Michigan basketball was so good for a long time, but their defense was just lax.
Right.
And Beilein had to sit there and be like, "All right, if I'm going to compete at a higher level, mm-hmm. I got to fix the defense."
Yeah.
And he did, and all of a sudden mm-hmm. they're very different than they were 4 years ago.
Right.
And that's
a good apt description of Penn State.
And or you can even look at Oklahoma. Oklahoma yeah. had an offense to die for, but they can't play any defense.
Yep.
And when you play a good enough team, it's going to catch up to you. Mm-hmm. So, and then you start look at goaltending, and the goaltending is, I mean, people talk about like Michigan, and is Levine very good? Is Mann good? I mean, they're not great, but like Wisconsin's goaltending team. I was going to give you what goalie I thought was going to start. But they're basically the same.
Now, when they came in earlier in the season, the Finnish.
I think goalie, we saw each one. I think we saw Barry once. We saw Demiroff or something like that.
Barry was not good earlier in the season,
and he wasn't good last year either.
Right. No. So I'm surprised to hear. I'm surprised to see that they both found equal ground,
similar numbers, mm-hmm. and their team save percentage is like .888, mm-hmm. which is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty bad.
That is pretty bad.
And their GAA is 3.5 almost, 3.4.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not keeping pucks out of the net.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really keeping the puck a lot.
Right.
Their special teams are not good. It's 16% mm-hmm. on the power play, which is, I mean, that's essentially what Michigan's is,
territory.
Somewhere around there. And their penalty kill's at 74.
Oof.
Which, I mean, that's what Michigan... You remember last year during the stretch run when Michigan was doing really well on most phases, but the penalty kill was just awful. Mm. And anytime they took a penalty, everyone's like hanging on for dear life for 2 minutes.
Yep.
I mean, that's exactly what Wisconsin's power play or penalty kill is now.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at those things, like this sets up fine for Michigan. I know it's on the road. I know that Michigan hasn't always had the most success in Madison, but this isn't a great Badger team. And Michigan, I think, can get 3 or 4 points and at least get the 3 seed. And if they get both games, they have a good shot of getting the 2, which, like we talked about, would not allow them to leave or would not make them leave Yost until the final. And then there's no guarantee because, as we saw last weekend, Ohio State was fine, but they weren't amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And in a one gamer against a team like Penn State, against a team like Minnesota or Notre Dame or whoever it ends up being that they would face, I mean, they can be taken out.
Michigan can play with any team in the conference. Yeah. I think they've proven it over the course of the season. We would have liked them to be a little bit more consistent, but they can definitely play with anybody. I would think they should pretty much handle Wisconsin to an extent. It's going to be tough going on the road.
Yeah.
It's a tough place to play.
Maybe. I mean, who knows? Does anyone care at Wisconsin? You're sixth or seventh in the conference.
I don't know.
Are they going to all show up?
The attendance at the Minnesota series was so bad.
Right.
So I guess that's a good question.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, they might be fired up, but...
It's still a matter of being on the road, being in a hotel, being in a strange locker room.
Yep.
You know, not being familiar with the ice. You know, there's all those kind of things.
Is it
It's just
Olympic?
I'm not sure.
I don't think it is.
I think it's just different,
Minnesota.
Though, right? The angles are different. The corners are different.
Sure.
It's just a different game. So we'll see. I think that, you know, it's a good opportunity for Michigan, is what you're saying.
Yep. Like, they've always been... I mean, you know,
I would expect them to get more than two ties out of this weekend.
Yeah, I think three locks up the three seed. I'm pretty close to, anyway. It does.
A win and a loss.
A win and a loss. Yeah. And they've won, like, every Friday game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when they weren't good... Well, they tied, I guess. Mm-hmm. But they haven't lost on a Friday. Mm-hmm. And, like, they've started to look better on their Saturdays, I guess. So, and, you know, I don't know. I look at this and I think that this is it's hard for me to see them not getting at least 3 points this weekend, one way or another.
I would agree. Then it would, your prediction of 6 points on the last two weekends will come true. And I
would be seven.
I predict that it will.
You said, I didn't bring this up.
I was going to, no,
I was
okay.
going to say
I'm
it to
okay
start
being
it,
wrong. Yeah.
But I didn't, you said, no. you said they'd go 1-3 in these last,
I thought they would. Yeah.
Four games. Mm-hmm. I said 2-2. Obviously, they can't go... I mean, I guess if they get 2 points, they go 2-2, but...
Right.
Then it's essentially a tie and a loss. So, like I said, 7 o'clock for Notre Dame, Penn State, mm-hmm. 9 o'clock for Michigan. We'll be watching. We'll be watching Saturday night, I assume, too.
Yeah, of course.
And I think the home seed's on the line. They probably get it. If they mm-hmm. do really well, I bet they get the 2.
Yeah, we'll be back for a preview of that.
Yeah, we'll check in next weekend to look at that, and we'll start looking at the Big Ten tournament.
Thank you for listening to MGO HockeyCast 1.8. I am Anthony Ciotti with David Nasternak. This podcast was best listened to while you are scrambling eggs or sitting through a 10-minute penalty review.